It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up, how does Vice President Pence's stay at a Trump property in Ireland fit into the conversation about emoluments and the operations of a business owned by the president? A law professor digs into the legal and ethical questions. First, you might have heard the word umami in conversations about food and cooking. That's U-M-A-M-I. It's a flavor that's kind of difficult to define. People often describe it as somewhere between savory and meaty. While it's difficult to put umami into words, it is in a lot of foods that are delicious. Things like Parmesan cheese, soy sauce, or mushrooms. And ingredients like these can add a little something special to all kinds of foods. Our next guest recently developed recipes that incorporate umami flavors into everyday cooking, especially vegetarian dishes. Raquel Palzel is a recipe developer and the author of a bunch of cookbooks. Her latest is called Umami Bomb, 75 Vegetarian Recipes That Explode with Flavor. Raquel, thanks a lot for joining us today.
My pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, you heard my stab at explaining umami. How do you describe the flavor to people?
You know, it's kind of like if you eat something and it tastes fine, and then you add some aged Parmigiano-Reggiano cheese to something, and then it's like, wow, it's kind of, you feel like the sun's shining on you all of a sudden on a cloudy day. That's kind of umami. It's just like everything goes from black and white to technicolor, you know? It makes things just taste bigger and bolder and just like more savory and satisfying.
I think of it as like kind of a richness under other flavors too. Does that sound about right?
Yeah, I mean, it's richness, it's savory, it's kind of this, you know, umami, it's this almost indescribable sense of deliciousness that kind of gets into your cheeks and makes you want to take another bite.
And a lot of times people get this flavor with some kind of meat or fish, and you do a little bit of fish in your book, but your main goal, it seems like, is to get this umami-rich flavor with non-meat ingredients, right?
Yeah, I think it's a great way to give vegetables tons of flavor. And, you know, I eat mostly vegetarian. Well, actually, I eat almost all vegetarian at home. I do eat a little bit of fish here and there. But I really wanted to write a cookbook that reflects how I eat and how my kids eat. And, you know, I have people over for dinner. And so often, like, wow, the vegetables taste so great. How do you do this? How do you do that? And I really wanted to be able to address that because umami, it's simple. It's just adding an extra ingredient, but it really can transform something simple like roasted vegetables or tomato sauce even.
You look at the science of umami at the beginning of your book. It's really just a couple of amino acids that really add this flavor.
Yeah, you know, umami, it's essentially, it's the, when protein breaks down, it becomes amino acids, and that's kind of what makes up umami. Now, there's different amino acids. There's glutamate, there's guanylate. Those are found in mostly vegetables or seaweed and things like that. And then when you pair them together, it becomes even bigger. The flavor becomes even more pronounced and crazy. So throughout the book, you know, sometimes I'll use one umami ingredient and then sometimes I'll pair a few together. So, you know, you get all of these things going on in your mouth. And you know, the proteins, they break down once the umami ingredient is fermented or aged or, you know, seared or caramelized. So take a mushroom. A fresh mushroom might not have a ton of umami in it, but once you grill those mushrooms, it's like, wow, it becomes something totally different.
Talking to Raquel Palzel on this edition of Food Friday. Her new book is called Umami Bomb. You divide the book up by the different ingredients in your toolkit, the different things that can add that umami flavor. We'll get into a couple of specific recipes in a minute, but I'll start with the first one you look at, cheese, a particular kind of cheese. And this is Wisconsin, so why not start with this? Like Parmesan, especially like aged Parmesan and things like that. Talk about how that gives us this umami flavor.
Yeah, well, you know, when cheese is aged, it's losing its moisture content, and you get these little protein crystals that are in the cheese. So if you eat, you know, say aged cheddar, aged Gouda, you know, when you get those little pop, that little pop of crunchiness in a piece of cheese, that's just protein. And so that's why an aged cheese just has more umami than, say, a young mild cheddar or, you know, a lesser aged Parm. So I tried to pick a couple of cheeses that I thought are you know, just beautiful, delicious, easy to find aged cheeses. But that's not to say that other aged cheeses don't have umami. So, you know, any of the cheeses in this chapter, you know, mostly I use Parm, aged Gouda, you know, that really beautiful butterscotchy colored Gouda, and aged cheddar. Because I thought they just added the most, you know, the biggest flavor and the most pronounced umami flavor.
Now, here it is, apple season. And one of the recipes you shared with us, we've got this at WPR.org/Food Friday, Gouda Apple Thyme Galettes. Tell us about this one.
Yeah, I mean, can you think of a better thing to do in the fall than make apple pie? I can't. And I love to take my kids apple picking in the fall. And, you know, when you end up with just more apples than you kind of think you know what to do with. I mean, I went to a school in Wisconsin, actually. I went to Marquette University for a little bit in college. And apples and cheddar, that's kind of a classic combination.
Yeah.
So I started thinking of cheese and apples. And you know, I went straight into pie season. And then I thought, tried to think of something that was a little bit savory but a little bit sweet. And I came up with this idea for kind of a semi-savory galette. And these are like free-form tarts. And why I love them is because they're easy. You know, it's, you don't have to crimp the pie crust. It's essentially just roll the dough and then you free-form it on a sheet pan. And, you know, if a little bit of apple busts out the side, it's okay. And you can call it rustic and no one cares, you know. And so I put a little bit of grated cheese. I put Gouda in the pie crust. And I put Gouda also on top of the thinly sliced apples before I bake it. So there's kind of a double dose of cheese. And it's not to make it cheesy. It just gives it like a little bit of extra, almost a caramel flavor. You know, the cheese kind of mellows out in the oven. And it just brings this kind of extra dimension of flavor to the tart. And there's thyme. And then I also toss the apples with maple syrup. So there's just a lot of flavor going on. And I think it's something really great to make that could be a little unexpected, that you could serve for dessert, you know, with maybe ginger ice cream would be delicious. Or you could serve it as part of a cheese course even, you know, a slice, you know, alongside a cheese board.
We're talking to Raquel Pelzel right now, author of the new book, Umami Bomb, 75 Vegetarian Recipes That Explode with Flavor. She's with us on this week's edition of Food Friday, and you can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have a question about this concept of umami and the flavors and the ingredients that can work into it? Do you have a favorite dish that incorporates these kind of things? Do you add stuff like mushrooms, caramelized onions, soy sauce into your cooking to add that extra something, even if you don't know exactly what that something is? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can find some recipes at WPR.org/Food Friday. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Raquel Pelzel stays with us talking about the unique flavor called umami on this edition of Food Friday and how to add it into our cooking, from soups to entrees to desserts. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have a question for our guest, a recipe that you'd share that kind of has this umami feel to it that we're talking about? Do you like to use ingredients like miso, caramelized onions, roasted up mushrooms to add an extra layer of flavor, or aged cheeses in places you might not expect them? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Raquel, a real common ingredient that people can reach for that you have in your book, soy sauce.
Yeah, soy sauce has tons of umami in it. It's deep, it's bold, and you can kind of add it in when you least expect it. So in my book, I added it. I started playing around with adding soy sauce to different sauces, really. And I found that it worked so well in marinara sauce, which can be kind of a surprise for people. And sometimes they look at me like I'm a little bit crazy. But it does add this really kind of mellow, mild, extra, a little bit of caramel again, but this nice deep note to a marinara. And it doesn't taste like soy sauce. It does not give it, you know, an Asian vibe at all. It still tastes like your favorite soy sauce, your favorite marinara sauce ever, but even more so.
Now, there's a recipe from your soy sauce chapter that you shared with us. We have it up at WPR.org/Food Friday. I apologize to any Italian speakers out there. Eggs in puttanesca purgatory. This the name has a weird story behind it.
It does, kind of. So it's named after a tomato sauce that's essentially called the style of the whore. It's not the most afternoon-y friendly in the recipe content, I guess, but you know, it's because it's kind of salty, it's a little briny, it's a little spicy. It's all of these things in one, and that's from capers, and it's from red pepper flakes, and, you know, it's just like a really delicious kind of bold and funky marinara. And I use it as the base to poach some eggs for a really, really awesome, it could be I eat it for breakfast, but you could totally serve it for dinner with some really nice toast. And, you know, you get a lot of umami from tomatoes. So there's umami in the tomato sauce, and then you get extra umami from the soy that I add to the tomato sauce. So it's really delicious.
It is this week's edition of Food Friday. We're talking to Raquel Palzel. Her new book is called Umami Bomb, 75 Mostly Vegetarian Recipes That Explode With Flavor. We've got a few of the recipes she shared with us at WPR.org/Food Friday. That interesting egg recipe we were just talking about. The Gouda apple thyme galettes we talked about earlier. One more I think we'll get into before we're out of time. And you can call in at 800-642-1234. Now, something that I didn't know fit into this umami category, Raquel, you've got a whole chapter on tomatoes, so prepared maybe in a certain way. Talk about how tomatoes can give us that umami flavor.
Yeah, tomatoes, tomatoes have... they have the glutamate, so when they are cooked or when they're sun-dried or when they're, you know, kind of simmered in a sauce, but again, the proteins break down into the amino acids, and you kind of get this wonderful, bold, rich flavor. So kind of anything with a cooked tomato product can deliver some umami. So, anything from sauce that you put on a pizza creates umami. So then if you add Parmigiano Reggiano cheese to that, you get double umami hit. And then, you know, even roasted tomatoes, which I have a recipe for in the book, you know, you get tons of umami for that, especially when it's tossed with herbs and olive oil and salt. And then you can use those roasted tomatoes to add extra umami to anything from a grilled cheese sandwich to, blending them up to use in a sauce.
Let's bring on a caller now. Karen is with us in Wauwega. Karen, hi.
Hi.
What do you want to tell us about, Karen?
Well, I would like to say that I myself flavor my foods with amino acids, which you can buy in the grocery store, Briggs amino acids, and it gives it that nice, nutty, meaty flavor.
Yeah, I've seen that in stores, liquid amino, I think. Thanks for that, Karen. I've never actually tried that myself, and I heard a yeah there, Raquel. This will fit the bill?
Yeah, you're just cutting straight to the chase. straight to the jugular, straight for the umami. You can totally add a few things to that in anything, and it does add like a bit of bold, a bit of richness for sure.
Thanks a lot for that suggestion, Karen. Oh, getting back to the soy sauce, I meant to ask Raquel. You talk about different kinds of soy sauce. Do you have a favorite for different kinds of cooking that really adds the great umami flavor?
You know, I really like to use, actually low-sodium soy sauce at home, and I usually like to use tamari. Sometimes I get shoyu, sometimes tamari, but I prefer a Japanese soy sauce flavor to be a little bit more mellow, but, you know, a beautiful aged Chinese soy sauce is delicious, too. And then, of course, there's dark black soy sauces, which have even, like, a deeper, richer flavor. So there's a lot of different soy sauces out there to try. You should buy a couple. And sometimes you can find smoked soy sauce, and that is just incredible because you get the umami hit of smoke as well. You know, smoky adds an extra layer of flavor to the soy sauce, and it'll, you know, really create a wonderful savory quality to anything you splash it on.
That reminds me of the third recipe you shared with us. It uses the flavor of smoke and another ingredient, another chapter. You have miso. This is the chili tofu lettuce wraps with smoked salt. Tell us about that one.
I love this recipe so much. So essentially when I was thinking about grilling food, and I was thinking about, you know, you can grill mushrooms, and so often if you're a vegetarian, you'll get maybe a plate of grilled vegetables for dinner while everyone else is having a steak. And you know, that's fine, but, you know, sometimes it's not the most satisfying. In this book, I tried really to kind of think outside the box and to play around with ideas that maybe weren't super expected. So for this one, I took tofu and I made a sauce out of this wonderful sauce made from it's called sambal ulek. It's like an Indonesian paste made from garlic and peppers, and I whisked that with a little bit of miso, and then I used that as a marinade for the tofu, and wrapped that in, after cooking the tofu, I wrapped that in lettuce wraps with peanuts and herbs, and it was almost like, you know, you get a little sweet, you get a little tangy, you get a ton of umami. It's super satisfying, and it's great as like an hors d'oeuvre, because it's handheld, you know, for these last breaths of summer that hopefully you will be fortunate to have, or, you know, or as a meal.
Raquel, thank you so much for joining us and sharing these flavors with us today.
Absolutely. My pleasure. I really hope everyone can play around with some umami ingredients and get some more flavors on their veg.
That's Raquel Palzel. Her new cookbook is Umami Bomb, 75 mostly vegetarian recipes that explode with flavor. You can find three recipes that we've talked about today on the show, the Gouda Apple Thyme Galettes, the chili tofu lettuce wraps with smoked salt that we were just talking about, and the oddly named eggs in Puttanesca Purgatory. Those are all online over at WPR.org/Food Friday. It's time now for Wisconsin Life. Here's producer Maureen McCollum with a visit to the arcade.
Like many children of the 80s and 90s, Hilton Jones grew up playing pinball. His favorite machine, the Addams Family, brings about an air of nostalgia to days when kiddie cocktails, a basket of day-old popcorn, and a stack of quarters were all a person needed to get lost in the world of flippers, multiballs, and free games. As adults living in Madison, Hilton and his wife Heidi are tapping into that nostalgia, spreading their love for pinball to others in the Madison community.
I'm Hilton. I'm one of the three co-founders of Madison Pinball.
I'm Heidi. I'm not directly involved with Madison Pinball, but I do support it, and I play a lot of pinball.
And then Heidi also is a founding member of Bells and Chimes. Heidi and I specifically collect rare games that were made in the 80s or early 90s and you don't find as often. We like having those so that when we have friends over, we have games that they've never even played before. I think there's a lot of nostalgia, but I also think everyone's glued to their phones. And arcades are that nostalgia, but also that opportunity to come have a beer and socialize and put away the phone. And pinball specifically, right, it's a physical game. Every game changes, it's unique. And you can cheer each other on. So it's a lot of fun to have that social experience, to do it together. There's a lot of gamers out there. And if you think, you know, a lot of 30-year-olds, people who are at bars drinking, right, grew up in the video game age. I grew up in Belvidere, Illinois in the 90s. And pinball was pretty big in the 90s. And I played a lot of Addams Family Pinball, which is my favorite pinball of all time. Still my favorite pinball of all time. And the collecting side and the rebuilding and the playing side happened postgraduate school.
I grew up in Texas, so not as close to the pinball manufacturing mecca of Chicago, so did not really play a lot of pinball till I met Hilton in graduate school. We played a couple tables here and there, and I realized that it's a good sport, in quotation marks, for people who are super competitive.
Like any sport, it's all about practice. But there are lots of videos, so you can watch online and see flipper techniques, you know, how to trap a ball, how to aim, how to control. Or you can do the most common thing you should do, but no one does, is read the rule card, which is on every single game, on the apron of it, and it will give you the general idea of what you should do on the game.
Or you just try not to drain the ball between the flippers.
Shoot the blinky light. A lot of people, they really get into pinball when they start to realize that it's kind of like a board game. There's objectives, there's a rule set, there's a strategy of what you're shooting for. Instead of just trying to keep the ball in play, you're actually aiming for a shot.
What I feel most proud about as far as playing was there's a big tournament in Pittsburgh every year that has like 840-something people called Pinburg. And this past year, I qualified in the A division and qualified in place 62 out of 843 people, and that's against the top pinball people in the world.
I'm continually amazed. You know, I lived through the 90s when it was really popular. In the 90s, in Belvidere, Illinois, a little podunk town, every spot had a pinball machine, the Hub Cigar Store and every restaurant, and that died out. And it's really neat to see it come back. I don't know where it stops or if it does stop. I mean, I'm sure it's cyclical, but everything seems to be going up from here.
And the other side of that, too, is not only are people becoming more interested in it, there's also more manufacturers coming into the picture. One of them actually is local to Wisconsin. Spooky Pinball is based in Benton, Wisconsin, and they've come out with a couple games. And I think just the wide variety of people and companies manufacturing pins is also helping grow the popularity of pinball.
I think we've taken ownership of it. I mean, I'm proud to say I'm a pinhead.
Why, thank you, Bing.
That story came to us from WPR's Jenny Peek. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio in partnership with the Wisconsin Humanities Council. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. Find more Wisconsin Life at wisconsinlife.org and on Facebook. I'm Maureen McCollum.
Ever since I was a young boy, I played the silver ball from so long.